I'm Marty Moss Cohen. Welcome back to Radio Times.
This is my pops, Jackie Hurt. My pops loved to eat, and he loved eating soul food. Barbecued ribs, grits and eggs, collard greens, ham hocks, cornbread, mac and cheese, black-eyed peas, sweet potato pie, you name it, he loved it.
That's Byron Hurt narrating the opening of his latest film called Soul Food Junkies. It's a personal, political, culinary, and historical exploration of soul food and its many meanings to African-American families. The movie was inspired by his father's weight and poor health, and it took him on a journey to the South to find out about the roots of these high-calorie comfort food. It's played an important role during the Civil Rights Movement, and today there are efforts to prepare this food in a healthier, more life-sustaining manner. In fact, Byron Hurt ends his film with a call to African Americans to demand better food in their communities, to change their diet, exercise, and take control of their health. Byron Hurt joins us here in our Philadelphia studios. He's a writer, producer, director, as I said, of Soul Food Junkies, and nice to have you with us on
Thank
Radio
you so
Times.
Much. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. And I have to say, watching your film, I got really hungry.
I mean, the film does that to people.
I mean, this food tastes good.
It does That's taste part of good, the, and it looks very good on screen as well when you're watching it. So I've had several people say that the film is good because it makes them think about, you know, eating healthy, but it also makes them very hungry at the same time.
Indeed. So, well, and your story does begin, or your film, I should say, begins with your dad, who loved this kind of food, ate a lot of it, and got very heavy and had health problems.
Yes, he did. Well, you know, I loved my father. I still love my father. And I wanted to have him around for as long as possible. And my father was overweight for most of my life, as long as I can remember. And, you know, when you're a little boy, you're in school, and, you know, you hear about things like obesity and heart attacks and strokes and diabetes and all of those different things. You know, you start to get concerned, you know, when you realize that the person that you love is, at risk. You know, so I spent a lot of time when I was a young boy, you know, concerned about his health and wanting him to lose weight and change his eating habits. And I just saw how difficult it was for him. He loved to eat. My father really loved to eat, and he loved eating soul food as well as fast food and other foods. So, I mean, that was his particular, I say vice, if you will.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's what kind of led me to make the film.
But it was a hard conversation to have with your dad.
It always was a hard conversation to have with him because, you know, I guess, you know, he just didn't want people telling him what to do, what to eat, what not to eat, you know, and I think that's how a lot of people are. People don't like, you know, to be around people who are policing them around their food, you know, and food is very, very personal, and it's hard for people to change their eating habits. People don't want to feel like they're losing something or letting go of something that they enjoy. And so I understand that it's a real challenge to get people to change their eating habits and to eat differently.
Well, your book is as I said, it's a kind of a personal story. It's also a political, culinary, and other story as well. But it's clear that your family was concerned about your dad and that there were traumas that he had to deal with. And I wonder whether you think the food was a way of him soothing or comforting himself from some difficult things that happened in his life.
I think so. He experienced losing his mother at a very, very early age. He witnessed, physical abuse, you know, in his home, you know, toward his mother. He lost his son, his very first son, at four years old. His son was 4 years old.
When he died,
yeah, it would be my older brother. Died tragically from a accidental gunshot wound. So, I think that my father did experience a tremendous amount of trauma. And if you add on top of that, being an African-American man who had to live through, you know, Jim Crow in the Deep South, I mean, I think all of those things may have contributed to his love, you know, for food and, you know, eating as a way to cope, you know, with some of those traumatic events.
But as I said, this movie is also your personal journey, and it's clear that this food has so much meaning in your family. I mean, your mom cooked most of the meals. Mm-hmm. You described taking trips down to Georgia,
yes,
packing up, you know, the food for the road,
yes,
and the kind of family feeling that goes along with this kind of food.
Well, those were good times.
Indeed.
I mean, they were great times, you know, for us as a family, you know, taking those trips down to Milledgeville, Georgia. You know, it's where, you know, I developed my own sensibility about being an African-American and you know, what my parents lived through and what African-Americans lived through, you know, through slavery, Reconstruction, Jim Crow and all those different things, you know, hearing stories that my father told and my mother told about, you know, Jim Crow and the civil rights era and the civil rights movement. But food was a real big part of that journey as well. And it was soul food that we packed up in the bags and brought with us, you know, and You know, just learning and understanding that, you know, black folks had to adapt and cope with not being able to eat in, you know, restaurants, you know. And so that's one of the reasons why we had to pack our food, you know, and take it with us. So, I mean, you know, I in my film, I don't throw soul food out of the window. I don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. You know, it's I recognize it as something that is a really important part of our culinary history and our cultural tradition. And but I also, you know, try to challenge us to prepare it differently so that we could become healthier.
And part of your film is also a history of this food. You talk to a number of historians talking about the food that was grown in West Africa, what came over on the slave ships, and perhaps even what was eaten and grown during slavery times in this country.
Yes, yes.
Because I would think you'd need high-calorie food in order to, you know, frankly, be a slave and survive.
Well, this is true. And it was important for us to really convey that Southern food, a Southern food that was cooked and prepared by black people, enslaved Africans, has a very rich and interesting and complex history. And it extends all the way back to West Africa, you know, and covers the entire, you know, so this Western Hemisphere. You know, including South America and the Caribbean, and has had a tremendous amount of influence in the southern United States. You know, which has then sort of traveled up north and that sort of thing. So I wanted to be able to show and reveal little aspects of the history of soul food that the average person may not have known.
Well, in fact, I want to play a clip from the film, and this is taking us up to the civil rights movement and the role that some of this food and even some restaurants played. And this is Miss Peaches, and she had a restaurant in Jackson, Mississippi, and became a key source of sustenance to some of the civil rights protesters. We begin first with Miss Peaches' son and then Miss Peaches herself. Let's listen.
I know they was having some type of protest downtown, and what they'll do when they arrest you and take you down to the fairgrounds, and they'll put you where they keep the horses and cows at. The people didn't have nothing to eat all day, of course. I think they'll let them stay for 4 or 5 hours and stuff like that. But what Mom, Miss Peaches did, I think she made over like 100-some sandwiches. She had just opened up, I think, 7 or 8 years. It was in the 60s. So she really didn't have a lot of food herself. So she made all the sandwiches and stuff and got in the little car and took the food down there to the fairgrounds for the civil rights marchers, had something to eat.
You out there and being misused, mistreated, people dogging you around and you ain't got nowhere to go. I think it was my duty to open the door and let you in.
Well, you're looking at a little black lady. You know, she could have been afraid because she has the white police officer with German shepherds. And she could have got in trouble for opening her door and letting all these people run in here. If I was growing up in her era, I don't think I would get half the stuff she did. Because I used to see her come home and count pennies. Couldn't even pay bills, but she started feeding folks.
And having the ability to cook gave me power. It made me stronger, made me want to do more of it because the people depended on me to do it. And when you expect me to do something, I want to do my best. And I will do my best.
That's a scene from Soul Food Junkies, and that's Miss Peaches, who made sandwiches for civil rights protesters back in the 90s. Who doesn't love Miss Peaches?
Oh, she was great. She was great. Her story was phenomenal. Her son was phenomenal. And just the backstory with that piece is I interviewed her son first, and she was unavailable. In fact, it looked like I was not going to be able to interview her. And her son just spoke so glowingly of her. And I could just tell that he had so much love and admiration and respect for his mother that I practically begged him to bring his mother in. And so the next day, you know, she came in to the restaurant after church. She had on her church clothes and she was just the most beautiful, loving woman. And, you know, she reminded me of, you know, the elders in my family. And, you know, we had a great conversation. And, you know, it was clear that soul food was a huge part of her identity, you know, both in her family, but also in the community of Jackson.
Well, I love the way she said to cook was about power. I mean, it was a way of being part of this movement. And it sounds like even the phrase soul food came out of the civil rights movement.
Yeah, from what I understand, you know, soul food sort of emerged or had been coined during this civil rights, black power, black arts movement. You know, when people were reclaiming certain aspects of black culture, you know, and I guess sort of placing them or wearing them as a badge of honor, you know. And so soul food was a part of our culinary heritage and our culinary tradition that we wanted to maintain. Some people said that it was an unhealthy part of our culinary tradition, and some people said this is the food that we survived on. This is all the food that we had to eat, and it helped us, you know, survive some difficult times. And so that's where there's a bit of a, you know, some tension.
Well, and it's interesting because you have, as you say in the film, the Black Panthers are saying part of their, I guess, breakfast programs or part of their political program was to say, eat healthy. Even the Nation of Islam said, you know, this is not the kind of diet that's good for people.
Slave food.
Slave food,
they
called
it. This is slave food. This is food that comes from the bottom of the barrel. But Dr. Lenny Sorensen, you know, who's in my film, you know, talks about how, you know, it's a little bit more complicated than that. There were slaves who had access to land, access to provisional grounds where they could grow their own food, they could grow their own vegetables, they could raise their own chickens and other animals that they would then, you know, kill and eat. And that's how they, you know, survived. And that's how they were able to work those long hours from sun up to sundown, you know, in the field. So, you know, I wanted to complicate soul food, if you will.
Well, let's take a very short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. We are talking about soul food with our guest Byron Hurt, and he's a documentary filmmaker. In fact, his most recent film is called Soul Food Junkies, about the evolution of soul food from West Africa to the U.S., the many meanings it has had for African American families, what it has meant in his family as well. And he's a New Jersey-based filmmaker and joining us today on Radio Times. And we'd love to hear from you as well. That phone number, 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. What does soul food mean to you? Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Garden State Wine Growers Association supports WHYY and presents its annual Wine and Chocolate Trail Weekend, February 9th and 10th. In celebration of Valentine's Day, the trail features wine tastings and chocolate samplings from noon to 5 p.m. at participating wineries. From the Skylands in northern Sussex County to the tip of Cape May, there are six different trails showcasing wines from more than 40 wineries throughout New Jersey. Full details at newjerseywinetrails.com.
I'm Marty Moscoane, and I'm here to remind you about the important role that you play at WHYY. We get about half of our operating funds from people like you who listen. That's why we say listener supported. We're in what we hope is the final stretch of the winter membership campaign, and we want you to make a pledge of support right now. Here's that phone number. It's 1-888-345-9499, and you can pledge online at WHYY.org. We need to stay on track and make our hourly goals. This morning on Radio Times, the history that led to the Vietnam War with author Frederick Logeval and filmmaker Byron Hurt talking about his documentary, Soul Food Junkies. We cover everything on Radio Times. What's that worth to you? How about a pledge of $60 and we'll send you the Radio Times anniversary mug designed by our very own Pulitzer Prize winning Tony Auth. 1-888-345-9499. And you can pledge online at WHYY.org. Thanks for making that pledge. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane, talking with award-winning documentary filmmaker Byron Hurt. His most recent film is Soul Food Junkies, and that's our topic for today's Radio Times. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. There's a woman in your film talking about this soul food that comes from West Africa to the South, and she says that this is what how white people learn to cook. Because they learned from soul food,
mm-hmm.
just in terms of just the power of this food to move across the country, to sort of migrate all over the country.
Right. That was Jessica Harris, I believe, who said that. And Jessica Harris is a historian, and she's a writer, and she soul food is her area of expertise. And she made several very powerful comments like that about the history of soul food and the fact that. Soul food is what folks ate for dinner. You know, I mean, no one really called it soul food then.
They called it dinner.
They
right?
just called it dinner. Yeah, and I really wanted to speak to people like Jessica Harris, like Frederick Douglass Opie, who wrote the book Hog and Hominy, and Dr. Lenny Sorensen, and Lois Eric Eli, and Bryant Terry, and others who really had a real strong sense of. The history and the importance of soul food, you know, as a culinary tradition in the African-American community and beyond, you know. So it was really important for me to include those voices to give the film some depth and some heft and credibility.
Do you think of it as comfort food? I mean, is that this is food that you grew up on? Do you think of it that way?
I don't really think of it as comfort food. I think of it as tradition. You know, I think of it as just a tradition. It's just food that's just a part of my family, you know, and in my community and, you know, my church family or, you know, my family, my larger family reunion. You know, when we get together, I mean, that's what we have. Mm-hmm. We have soul food, you know, and if you go anywhere where there are large numbers of African-American people, and I don't want to stereotype or generalize because it may not always be the case, but mostly you're going to find, you know, some down-home soul food, you know, that's going to be, you know, on the menu or on the plate.
Ribs, chicken,
black-eyed peas, collard greens, macaroni and cheese, you know, butter beans, you know, and then, of course, you can't forget the desserts, the red velvet cake and the sweet potato pie and the apple cobbler and, you know, all of that stuff. And so in that regard, you know, it's probably comfort food because it's familiar. Right. It's familiar to people. You know, it's just what we know.
But it's also high calorie. It also is probably high in salt, high in fat as well.
Yeah, it can be. And most times it is, but it doesn't have to be. And that's really the point of my film is that we can continue to have and maintain our cultural tradition. If we make some changes to it, you know, and maybe we can start to make some headway in some of these nutritional related diseases that are really plaguing, you know, the African-American community and the country at large, mm-hmm. not just the African-American community. So, you know, with some changes in the way that we prepare our collard greens or our chicken or, you know, some of our other you know, foods that we love to enjoy. You know, we could, you know, eat healthier.
Does it taste as good?
that's the big question. A lot of people, I just went to a soul food restaurant, in Newark, New Jersey yesterday, Vonda's Kitchen. I had sauteed spinach, I had string beans, and I had some blackened shrimp, and it was delicious. And that was a soul food restaurant. It was cooked healthily, and it tasted extremely good.
You have a great scene in this film where you go to Jackson, Mississippi to a football game.
Yes.
There, and there's a lot of really good food being cooked. I guess these tailgating parties, and
yeah.
These guys are getting you to try to eat out of this big pot. It's got corn and turkey necks, pig feet.
Wow, what a spectacle. I mean,
yes,
it was huge. Well, you know, I stopped eating that way. I mean, I don't really eat that way anymore. I mean, I grew up eating, you know, pig feet. pig feet, pig ears, and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. Turkey necks, everything that was in that junk pot I used to eat, you know. So it wasn't totally unfamiliar to me. It's just that I just don't eat that way anymore, you know. And also, I've also been raised, especially when I go home or when I go down south, you know, that if someone offers me some food, you know, the polite thing to do is to eat, you know, is to eat it, not to turn it down because people will be offended. And that particular scene, what makes that scene so funny, I think, is because, you know, I was kind of forced to eat something
you
that
were.
I don't normally
yes,
eat. I don't normally eat. But it tasted good.
I was going to say, it looks like it tasted good. This was a turkey neck,
It was a turkey neck that was drenched in pork juice.
But what we also see in this film is just this one, you know, camaraderie. People are having fun. They're cooking together. They're eating together. There's a great chemistry between everybody. And you're meeting people, and they're extremely welcoming.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, when I went down to Jackson and I spoke to people at the tailgate party and even at Miss Peach's, I mean, they were just really great, beautiful people. Very welcoming. They didn't know me. They didn't know how I would, you know, how I planned on, you know, telling the story of soul food or representing them, but they trusted me. And, you know, it was like really going home to a family reunion. You know, I felt very at home. I felt very comfortable. And, you know, so for me as a filmmaker, now this is just a personal decision. It's really important for me to represent and reflect my culture in a way that's honoring, you know, where I honor, you know, my culture, my heritage is very, very important to me. You know, I think there's a way that you can, you know, make a film that has a critique about a particular issue or problem in the community, but at the same time show a tremendous amount of love and care and sensitivity and respect for that community.
The film is called Soul Food Junkies, and junkies, of course, implies addiction.
Yes.
Do you see it that way?
Yeah, I do. And it's not just soul food. I want to be clear about that. I mean, it's fast food. It's food that is highly processed, that has a lot of salt and sugar. You know, food that we know is probably not the best for us, but we continue to eat it, either because it's accessible, highly accessible and cheap and inexpensive, or because we don't want to let go of certain traditions. You know, and we know, I mean, I go around the country and I've been showing this film, and one of the questions that I ask during the Q&A session is, how many people in here in the room know someone who has diabetes or heart disease or hypertension or is obese? And almost everyone raises their hand. Right. So, you know, we know that we have a problem in our families, in our communities, but we don't necessarily make the connection to the food that we're eating, among other things. But food is very, very important. And it's been proven that certain chemicals in food can be addictive.
Well, and your father is really an example of that. It's where your film begins. It's the kind of spark for this film, which is that he had health problems, but he couldn't or wouldn't stop eating this food.
Well, that's the question. Couldn't or wouldn't, you know? I mean, who knows? I mean, I really can't say for sure.
He certainly didn't.
But he just did it. And the thing that struck me is that he wanted to. He talked about doing it. And I think there are a lot of people in the country who want to make changes, but they either cannot because of how difficult it is, or they just don't want to let go of things that make them feel good. Yeah. And that's why it's so hard for people to lose weight, especially once you pack on the weight, or, you know, to deal with hypertension or other, you know, illnesses. You know, that may be plaguing you.
Well, and I wonder, too, even in your dad's case, because we get to know him a little bit in the film. Obviously, he had to deal with some traumas, I would say, in his life. But also this food connects him to his childhood. It connects him to his family, where he grew up, and all of those sort of powerful pulls to the past.
Exactly. And, you know, it was important to humanize my dad in that way, you know, because I think a lot of times when we talk about people who have issues, you know, we don't really see them as real human beings. And I wanted to humanize my father in that way, that, you know, here was a man who grew up during the 60s, the height of Jim Crow, and, you know, came out of a broken home and had some really, you know, bad experiences. He was a real human being. You know, he was a real human being that struggled with his weight, that struggled with giving up certain foods. And I think that is a story that a lot of people and a lot of families can relate to and identify with. And that's the reason why I chose to tell this very personal story in the hopes that people would be able to connect with it.
And that's Byron Hurt, our guest today on Radio Times. We are talking about Soul Food Junkies. That's his most recent film. He's an award-winning documentary filmmaker, writer, producer, director. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9-FOOD. Didn't I?
Yes, you did.
Let me do that again. I told you it makes me hungry. 1-888-477-9499. Let me get Karen from, looks like, Pleasantville, New Jersey to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Karen. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi there.
I just had to stop. I was actually driving and listening to the story, and I said, oh, my goodness, I have to call in.
Good for you.
I have three daughters. The oldest is actually teaching in Newark, so I'm definitely going to tell her about Rhonda's Kitchen.
Vonda is spelled Vonda. With a V. Vonda, yes.
Oh, Vonda with a
yeah.
V?
Vonda with a V.
Okay, awesome. But I have two other daughters. They're at Montclair State, and of course the oldest went there too. And they come home, they've been coming home, and I guess after maybe a month or two, they come through the door, and there has to be the smell of fried chicken and collard greens and the mac and cheese cooking. And they literally come in, and they just fall on the floor. And they have the smell of food, and I'm so glad I'm home. And they come in the kitchen, and they hug as they put their hand in the bowl and take out the chicken. And I believe in the kitchen table. So they'll sit at the table. We'll talk about school. Of course, somebody has, you know, an exam that they didn't do well on, and we just talk. There may be some other friends of theirs that come by. Mom, did you cook? Did you cook? And they smell the food, and they come in and they eat.
Well, Karen,
but it's a tradition, and it's been on Friday night when they come through the door, and we have to do it. And it's a must, and it's a tradition, and it's part of their healing from being away from home.
Well, Karen, it's a great call and taps into a number of things that we've been talking about, Byron.
That's true. I mean, it's a tradition that has been passed down from generation to generation, and I was the same way when I came home from school. You know, I wanted to have my mother's, you know, down-home cooking. My mother was a great cook, and she cooked all of the things that the caller just described. But one thing that happened for me when I was in college is that I got exposed to other culinary traditions in addition to my own. And I also was exposed to, you know, my friends who were in the Nation of Islam and were starting to change their eating habits. So the older I got, the more aware I became, I started to come home and I started to request that the food be made differently, which my mother was okay with. My mother was fine with, but my father was not okay with. I mean, it wasn't like he was angry with me, but he would sort of ridicule me or, you know, wonder what was going on. What am I learning up there, you know, in Boston?
Yeah.
What are they teaching you up there?
Do you think it was a loyalty thing for him?
It may have been. I say in my film that, you know, he may have felt like the food that he loved was being rejected, you know, on some level. But I don't want to dismiss the caller's point. I think the caller's point is that there's a familiarity, you know, that comes along with soul food, and it does provide a certain level of comfort for people who grow up on it, and you know, whose parents, who may have a mother who is a really great cook, and so it makes them feel like they're at home.
Well, and food is about all those senses too, mm-hmm. which are so powerful. Now, your sister is a vegetarian.
I don't know if she describes herself as a vegetarian, but she is a very healthy eater. She eats mostly vegetables, and I've learned a lot from my sister. She's the one who was the real catalyst for me and my mother to change our eating habits.
Really? Let me get Janice from Winfield to join us on Radio Times. And Janice, go ahead. You're on Radio Times. You're on the air, I should say.
Yes. Good morning.
Good morning.
I was just telling the person who answered the phone that my experience, I grew up in Birmingham, Alabama, mm-hmm. and my experience is the black people and the white people, we ate the same types of food. Paula Deen is a perfect example, if people know who Paula Deen is,
sure.
You know, on her cooking show. And it is more of a tradition, it's a mindset, my father would, that would, you know, we'd sit around the table and that would invoke old family history. He had a story tied to so many of the dishes that, you know, that he prepared. But I just wanted to say, in the South, we all eat the same.
Mm-hmm. Well, I appreciate the call, Janice, to Radio Times. Byron, anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's one thing that I think the caller is correct. One thing that I learned was that, you know, there are different people who try to lay claim to soul food. I mean, some say that, you know, there's a difference between Southern black food and Southern sort of country food and Southern food in general. But I think that there's no real question that, you know, African Americans are the sort of the chief creators and inventors, you know, of what is now known as soul food, although it has sort of, you know, crossed over and has been like a cross pollination, you know, of cultures when it comes to, you know, people eating. And I think Jessica Harris says that in the film, you know, very intelligently and very thoroughly.
Janice, thanks for the call to Radio Times. You can call as well. That phone number, 1-888-477-9499. You have some really interesting interviews, or an interview with Dick Gregory in your film, who is such a colorful,
funny,
very funny little guy.
Some of the things funny dude
we probably can't say on the radio, but nonetheless, he has a very strict diet.
He does. And, you know, of course, Dick Gregory has been, you know, on the nutritional, tip for a long, long time. And, you know, he was somebody who I really wanted to include, you know, in the documentary because of his strong position, you know, and because he has, you know, a history of really trying to raise awareness around health and wellness and nutrition and, you know, eating more vegetables and being a lot, being very aware of processed foods and the kind of foods that you eat. And, you know, like you said, he's a very colorful personality, yep, and he had a lot of flavor to the film.
Well, and he says soul food is dead food. I mean, that's Dick Gregory.
Death food, yes.
Death
he
food.
Says death food, yeah.
It'll kill you.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how
it's a strong statement.
It's a strong statement.
It's a very strong statement. And, you know, you have people on both sides of the coin, you know, some who believe that soul food is death food, right? That it's cooked, you know, laden with, you know, fatty meats and high salt and lots of sugar and all that kind of stuff is very bad for you. And then there are those, again, who say, this is something that's part of my family, and I have uncles and aunts and grandmothers and great-grandfathers who live well into their 80s and 90s, and so this is who we are, you know. So there's a real divide there, you know, between those who embrace it and wear it as a badge of honor and those who say, no, it's not, we got to change.
We're almost up in a break here, but do you think in some ways fast food has replaced some parts of soul food?
I absolutely do think that fast food has replaced soul food. I don't think most people sit around and prepare soul food meals on a daily basis like they did, you know, back in the day in previous generations. I think, you know, people have replaced, you know, the fried chicken that they cook at home with, you know, Popeyes and Church's fried chicken or Kentucky Fried Chicken or whatever corner chicken place that they have, or other fast food place, McDonald's or whatever. So I do think that's an issue that has to be talked about and addressed as well, and we do so in the film.
In fact, I want to pick up on that after this very short break. Byron Hurt, our guest today on Radio Times. He's a writer, producer, director of a film called Soul Food Junkies, and that's what we are talking about today on Radio Times. That phone number, 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Open Connections, a progressive educational environment, supports WHYY. At Open Connections, youth ages 2 through 18 attend programs 1 to 3 days a week from September to June. Guided by their principles of respect, freedom, responsibility, and natural learning, Open Connections serves as a community base for young people and their families seeking an innovative, collaborative, and process-conscious educational environment. An open house at their campus in Newtown Square is Sunday, February 10th at 4 p.m. Details at openconnections.org.
I'm Marty Moscowane. Thanks for listening to Radio Times. Now, take that next step and become a member. We get about half of our funds from our listeners, but unfortunately, only about 10% of our listeners are members. We can fix that when you take that next step and become a member. Here's that phone number. It's 1-888-345-9499. That's 1-888-345-WHYY. And you can always pledge online at WHYY.org. Think about what you get every day. 2 hours of Radio Times, Morning Edition, Talk of the Nation, Fresh Air, Newsworks, the BBC. It's a long list of local and national and international programs. Our job is to keep you informed and entertained. Your job is to support what you listen to. Today on Radio Times, the roots of the Vietnam War and a cultural, culinary, and personal history of soul food. What's that worth to you? $5, $10, $20 a month? 1-888-345-9499 or pledge online at whyy.org. Thanks. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in I'm so thinking about food, I can't talk.
Freudian slips.
Every F word becomes food for me during this hour. Talking with filmmaker Brian Hurt, and his film Soul Food Junkies is about his exploration of the appeal of soul food. Of course, we know fried chicken, grits, ribs, sweet potatoes. His dad loved calorie-rich food, but couldn't or perhaps even wouldn't give it up, even when he was faced with serious health problems. And that got our guest Byron Hurt making this film. It's about the evolution of this food from West Africa to the U.S. and the many meanings it has had for and it continues to have for African-American families and the rest of us as well. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. It's interesting to think about this food and then to think about a growing movement, I would say, for local gardens, for CSAs. Your film is about the food deserts that often end up in poor urban communities and even poor rural communities. How do you see, I guess, soul food fitting into this changing food marketplace, I guess?
I think it fits in very well because so many of the foods, traditional foods that are part of the soul food tradition are vegetables, you know, collard greens, mm-hmm. kale, mustard greens, and sweet potatoes, yams, all of those different things that come from the earth that are really good for you.
Okra.
You know, if prepared, okra, if prepared, you know, well and not overcooked. And so I see many people within the food justice movement who are really trying to, you know, educate and bring awareness and bring access to healthy food in a way that's, you know, accessible and not so expensive. So there are many places around the country that are many cities around the country that are developing urban farms and food co-ops and CSAs and other things to make food much more accessible to people, healthy food, much more accessible to people. And I just want to say, by the way, before I started working on this film, I didn't even know there was such a thing as food justice. I had no idea that there were people who were dedicated and committed to making their community aware about the fact that they had the right to have healthy food accessible in their neighborhood or their town or their city. So that was one thing that I really learned and I continue to learn about. The whole idea of food deserts, food swamps, food insecurity, food sovereignty. I mean, these are things that I didn't even know, you know, about, you know, before making this film.
Sonia Sanchez is in your film. She's a Philadelphia-based poet, and she talks about shopping in some of these poor neighborhoods and complains bitterly about the quality of food. And that's an issue as well, that even if you have a supermarket, perhaps in a poor community, is it the same quality food that you might find in the suburbs, for instance?
Exactly. And she's she speaks from a very empowered place because as someone who knows what she's entitled to, she doesn't accept, you know, vegetables that she describes as looking like they're having a nervous breakdown.
Exactly.
Wilted vegetables that are, you know, past their prime. And so she speaks to that in the film. She does so in a way that only Sonia Sanchez can, you know, in a very powerful, intelligent and charismatic way.
Let me get Michael from North Philadelphia to join us on Radio Times. And Michael, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, I would like to ask the filmmaker Brian a question. That my father was born in 1901, my mother born in 1921, both from the South. Between the two of them, they had about 30 siblings, and with some notable exceptions, virtually all of their siblings lived into the 80s and 90s, and their entire diet was a soul food almost from the beginning to the end. And I'm curious if he might think that the lifestyle of Southern African Americans, as it related to living in the rural area, may have had something to do with that kind of a lifespan. Because I've often been struck as one who feels that soul food is not healthy food, that all all of my aunts and uncles lived in the 80s, 90s, and in some cases even to be 100, yet they ate pork chops, chitlins, the whole array of soul food. And I'm curious on his point of view on that.
It's, Michael, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. And Byron, go ahead.
It's a good question.
It is a good question.
It is a good question. I mean, I have a grandfather who's 94 years old, but my grandfather had two heart attacks. And after he had his second heart attack, he changed his diet completely. I mean, he still ate things that were from the soul food tradition, but he stopped eating the fried foods. He started eating more vegetables. He started eating baked chicken as opposed to, you know, fried chicken and that sort of thing. I think the lifestyle in the South may, you know, during a period of time, I think may have led to people living longer lives. But some of the most unhealthy states that we have in this country are southern states, like Mississippi, Texas. I mean, they have the highest rates of obesity. And I think
high rates of poverty
poverty. So we have to include class in that discussion as well, and economics. I think there has been a shift. You know, I think that we're a much more sedentary culture. I think we eat much more processed foods than previous generations. I think, you know, my grandfather and other people from previous generations, they didn't have to deal with so many chemicals in their food, pesticides in their food, chickens that were raised in factory farms and that sort of thing that we are exposed to today. And I think that all of those things lead to a decline in people's overall health. And people are not living as long, you know, as the previous generation. I mean, my father included. I think my father took for granted that he would live a long life like his uncles and some of his aunts. And so there is a difference there. I mean, I think that there is a clear difference. And I think it's between the processed foods, sedentary lifestyles, and other factors, environmental factors that are really doing us in.
Michael, thanks for the call to Radio Times. And Byron, I know you have a little girl.
I do.
So are you the family cook, or does the family cook together?
Well, I mean, we both cook. My wife and I, we both cook, and we really do try and eat healthy as we can. And that's good because we're both on the same page. You know, I think it's much more difficult when one person is trying to eat healthy and the other person eats whatever they want to eat, and they don't really pay attention to, you know, eating healthy. So we just try and introduce, you know, healthy foods to my daughter. I mean, from the time she's a very, very little girl, you know, I was teaching her different fruits and vegetables and how to identify certain things. We go to the supermarket. So she knows what a lot of fruits and vegetables are. And as I understand it, a lot of young children don't know what a lot of fruits and vegetables are because what they know is fast food, right? So, you know, we just try and provide a healthy environment, a healthy culture in the home. And we struggle, too. I mean, she's like any other kid who would prefer a treat as opposed to broccoli.
And do you eat fast food? Do you indulge?
I don't really eat a whole lot of fast food, no. Mm-hmm. I like to cook at home myself, and I like to go to restaurants that have healthy options.
And your mom, does she still cook?
My mom cooks, and she loves to cook.
And she's very thin, I have to say.
Yeah, she is thin, and but she cooks. She's made a lot of changes, and so she cooks very healthy. Her collard greens taste just as good to me as they did when she was using ham hocks and turkey necks and all kinds of other stuff. Now she uses olive oil and red pepper flakes, garlic, you know, all of those different spices to spice it up. And it tastes, I mean, her collard greens taste delicious.
Let me see what Joe from Flemington, New Jersey has to say. And Joe, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Good morning.
Good morning.
This is a great discussion. And
thank you.
I actually can't wait to see the movie now. I'm asking about a friend of mine. We just recently had a conversation about lifestyle changes and diet changes. And do you have any recipes or diets or books about healthy eating? He doesn't want to give up, like you say, the culture, but he wants to eat more healthy.
Yeah.
Well, you know, if you go to, thank you very much for your call. If you go to www.itisintomvisinvictorsisandsam.org and search for Soul Food Junkies, there are a bunch of healthy soul food healthy soul food recipes on that website that he can take a look at and read. Also, one of the people that we feature in the film, Bryant Terry, has a book called Vegan Soul Kitchen. It's a great book. I use the book myself. Those are two resources that you can have access to that can give you some healthy healthy options.
Yeah, Joe, thanks for the call to Radio Times. I've never thought of vegan and soul in the same sentence.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, there are a lot of vegan soul food restaurants, you know, around the country that are flourishing and doing well. You know, people are, you know, really trying to make choices, changes in their life, mm-hmm. and changing their life choices. So vegan restaurants are becoming very popular.
Let me get, looks like Joseph from Germantown to join our conversation. And Joseph, go ahead. You are on Radio Times. Go ahead, Joseph.
Hi, Marty. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Hi, Byron. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Fine. I just want to say this as a member of the Nation of Islam. You know, we was always taught by the Alec, about eating healthy, and that's what's so lacking, like I told the producer. See, Dick Gregory said it best, Byron and Marty. See, information is your best medicine. See, a lot of our people, the reason why you're so unhealthy because they ignorant. That don't mean that they're bad. They just don't know no better. So when you know better, you do better. Like right. You say, Byron, when you cook something like collard greens or mustard greens, which is traditional soul food in the black community, instead of seasoning it with pork butts or pork necks or whatever they cook, cooking to season with turkey butts or whatever like that. So you want to get all that pork and swine in mm-hmm. your system, eat more healthy and stuff like that. And see, like you said about the soul food vegan restaurants, like Byron just said, Marty, they popping up all over the United States in the neighborhoods now. If our people eat more healthy, have the knowledge and stuff like that, they'll start eating more healthier. And you won't see all this obesity, hypertension, and diabetes that's so fervent in the black community. Because information, like I said, is always your best medicine. Like I said, when you know better, one should do better.
Well, Joseph, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Byron, anything you want to add to that?
I think that food can either, you know, hurt you or kill you, or it can heal you, you know. And I have type 1 diabetes.
You do?
I do. I got diagnosed with type 1 diabetes after the film was made. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I was shocked and devastated by that news. However, you know, the diabetes that I was diagnosed with was not nutritional related. It had nothing to do with how I ate. I ate very healthy. It was just something that the doctors couldn't figure out. However, I will say that I've changed my eating habits even more, and my numbers are non-diabetic, mainly because I eat mostly vegetables, very few carbs, and I exercise. And so my doctors are amazed at how well my numbers are doing because they're absolutely normal. I mean, they're just like any other, like a person who does not have diabetes. And I attribute that mainly to the kind of food choices that I make.
Joseph said as a Nation of Islam, he sees food in perhaps the way that Dick Gregory does. And mm-hmm. you mentioned the fact that you didn't join the Nation, but you were interested.
I was influenced by it.
You were influenced by it.
I was influenced by it,
and was
yeah.
it the pork thing? I mean, was that the thing that
well,
changed
I mean, pork you? Pork was like a big issue, you know, among my friends. It's like to eat pork or to not eat pork. And, you know, it was like if you ate pork, then you weren't like a real conscious, you know, sort of activist or radical black person or black man. And so that was one reason why I gave up pork. The other reason was because, you know, I had been told and sort of informed that, you know, pork was high in salt and high in fat, and it led to certain illnesses that could prevent, you know, certain diseases. So that's one of the reasons why I cut it out.
And that's Byron Hurt, our guest today on Radio Times. And we've been talking about his latest film. It's called Soul Food Junkies. And he is a filmmaker and a producer, director, writer. I'm Marty Moscowane, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY. I know you just announced that you're about to raise funds and to
yes.
work on a new film, a film about hazing.
Yes.
What got? I mean, I can sort of imagine what got you interested in that, but what did?
Yeah, well, I just announced yesterday that my next film is going to be about the topic of hazing. And I was really inspired by the death of a young man named Robert Champion, who was killed tragically at Florida A&M University. And I am a member of a fraternity.
Are you?
I am Omega Psi Phi fraternity, and I've gone through a process in which I was hazed, and I've also hazed other young men when I was a younger, much younger man. And so I understand how real this problem is, this issue is, and I understand how controversial it is, and how people are really married to the idea of a rite of passage process that includes hazing. So I decided that I was going to focus on this as my next film project, and mm-hmm. we have a fundraising campaign that's going on at Indiegogo.com/hazing, Indiegogo.com/hazing. And we're asking for people to make, you know, donations to help me get this film done.
You're in this film, Soul Food Junkies. Will you also be in the next film?
I'm not sure. I mean, I may be.
Because you've been on sort of both sides of this issue?
Yeah. I haven't. I'm undecided about that. I mean, I'm sure that there'll be some aspect of my story that will be told in this film, but it's too early to tell at this point. But we're trying to raise $1,000 a day. So if you're listening, if you like my work, if you've seen Soul Food Junkies on my previous film, Hip Hop Beyond Beats and Rhymes, and you want me to continue doing great work, you know, as a filmmaker, please go to Indiegogo.com/hazing.
But is this going to be a film about African Americans or about
no,
all aspects of hazing?
No, I plan this to be a broad look at hazing. You know, hazing is not exclusive to African American men and women and fraternities and sororities even. I mean, it exists on athletic teams and in the military culture and other clubs and social organizations, exclusive, you know, secret society organizations. So I really want to get underneath the desire for people to belong, you know, in organizations in which they would put themselves at risk, you know, to actually endure hazing. And some of the power dynamics at play for those who actually, you know, haze people.
Well, it's interesting, and we're almost out of time here, to see the parallels between perhaps Soul Food Junkies and what you're going to be working on about identity and tradition and belonging and, you know, feeling part of a group.
Yeah. I think, you know, much of my work and much of my films are, you know, really to get individuals to challenge themselves, to grow, to evolve in their thinking and become more aware. So that's the kind of work that I try and create as a filmmaker.
Well, Byron Hurd, it's been a great pleasure. Thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you having me on.
No problem. We enjoyed it as well. And always an excuse to talk about food. And his film is called Soul Food Junkies. I'm Marty Moscowen. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times to find out much more about this program. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, he makes a very good mac and cheese. What can I say? The show produced by Susan Greenbaum, Patty McMahon, Dennis Devine, and Debbie Builder. I'm Marty Moscowen. Thank you so much for joining us, and thanks for those phone calls as well.